Señores y señoras, bienvenidos a esta sesión.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this symposium session that has to do with our brothers from Latin America. We have four very distinguished panelists who will present some very interesting presentations, I'm sure. I'm not going to take the time because we are lacking time to read everybody's biography, but you can find the information in the program. First of all, we are going to hear from Gonzalo Guerrero from Chile, and he is the director from the Religious Matters from the Secretary from Chile, and Maria Esperanza Andriacen Olivos, Director of Interfaith Affairs, Ministry of Justice and Human Rights from Peru. Then we have Jimena Guzman, Director of the Department of Entry Processing, National Directorate of Immigration from Argentina. And to end, we have Eliseo Rosales Avalos, General Director from the Federal Heritage Administration from Mexico. And then we will go in that order.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Good morning. First of all, I would like to express my gratitude for the invitation from BYU. And of course, I would also like to thank the students of this university who have been very kind in treating us. And I would start right off with the issue at hand. The title of my presentation is The Articulation of Religious Freedom and the Citizen Participation and the Democracy in Chile. And first of all, I need to tell you that this title has to do with the work that we have carried out as a government during the last 3 years. But before going directly to my presentation, I would like to tell you a few things. First of all, I am a government official, which means that I have a very optimist attitude in this regard. And so I'm going to be very optimist. And secondly, I'm also an evangelical. And that also has to do a lot with my presentation today because it gives me a particular perspective from the religious side. And I also do this from an academic point of view. I also teach lessons at the Catholic Papal University of Chile. Having said this, I would like to go straight to the concern of the government headed by President Piñera toward creating a solid society. And that society is based on three fundamental pillars. First of all, we have been wanting to create a society of security, a society of opportunity, and a society of values. Modern democracies have placed emphasis on the fact that the road toward development is created through a strong democracy and a strong economy. We all agree on that. However, in order to create a development model that will last through time, this is something that requires a society of values, and not just any value, but values that come from Christianity, which are fundamental and underlying values in our country. And they are considered universal values that put the human being at the center of our system, and we want to put humans at the center of our political, social, economic, and legal system. In this context is how we as a government have been promoting public policy that allow three clear objectives. First of all, we want to maximize religious freedom and religious equality. And secondly, we want to provide incentives for citizen participation in religious beliefs. And thirdly, we also want to strengthen the nuclear family as the basis of society. First of all, in terms of greater religious freedom, Chile has undergone change. As you know, in 1999, Chile enacted a religious law, which is very important. Something has to do with the constitution of legal entities and religious entities, and giving them, treating them in a way that is similar to the way other entities are. Before that, it was the Catholic Church that had that status. And so in Chile, we need to recognize that the fight or the struggle has been mainly through the evangelical and Protestant beliefs. They were the ones who began the struggle and who began this debate, and there's no doubt that they have received social recognition, that religious freedom has been strengthened upon the shoulders of the evangelical church. And on this context, President Piñera established 30 specific commitments with the evangelical churches in order to maximize religious freedom. One of the points that changed this paradigm was creating the National Office of Religious Affairs, which was an office that was in an advisor position to the president, but now it has turned around so as to advise the religions and be a point of contact with the government. This work has expressed itself in 64 boards of dialogue on regional, provincial, and national levels, both with evangelicals and other religions such as Jews, Muslims, and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We have heard them, and we want to know what they think about this specific topic of religious freedom in Chile. We have promoted participation of churches on issues that are relevant in the country, such as, for instance, the implementation of political policies, and also concrete action that tends to strengthen religious freedom. I'm going to read some of them. For example, we created a national system of identification of churches so that we could facilitate spiritual assistance for people who are in the hospital. We've created a law that allows religious people to spread the word of God through the radio, and we have also created greater access to public funds for the benefit of religious organizations. And we have been greatly concerned that religious organizations be within public discourse. The political, in Article 1 of the Political Constitution of Chile, requires all members of the national unity to participate in the national life, and also so that they can reach their greatest potential on the spiritual level. And in this sense, we're talking about the common good, which is simply the good of humans in society. And to reach that as a state, we do not want to exclude an important part of the national population. Religious organizations have something very important to say about these matters. And here I want to need to ask ourselves, why do we need churches to participate in the national debate on a greater level? First of all, we are a believing government. We're a Christian government. We've always said that from the beginning. We've always placed God at the center of our work. And these remind me of the words of the prophet Jeremiah. Jeremiah says, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose trust is in the Lord, and our trust is in God." And we've placed God at the center of our trust, and we should not be wrong about this. This is our basis, and we deeply believe this from the president and to those who work with him, that this is the correct path. Just a few years ago, it would have been very difficult to promote religious participation in national discourse. And we want the religious organizations to be together not only on certain events, but on a permanent level. In this sense, We have promoted their participation not only on moral issues, but also to contribute to discourse on issues of sociology and other levels. And lastly, we have promoted the idea that the family is the fundamental pillar of society. And also within the articles that we prepared for this presentation, I'm going to read a declaration from 1995 that President Hinckley, and it says, we call upon citizens and governments all over the world in order to strengthen the family and maintain it as the fundamental pillar of society. And for this, this is something that is very important because it is the driving force of our work. And I want, first of all, as a government, we have, from 3 to 6 months, we have promoted the idea that children are the a fundamental part of society, children and mothers. We've seen that this is something that we need to promote even more so that children can spend more time breastfeeding from their mothers. In Chile, around 12% of the population are on the below the poverty level, and we want to bring them out of poverty. It's a public policy with conditional subsidies that are only given if people are working as a family to receive. The mother has to be present, the father has to be present. And there are many things that we've done, but the most important thing is that we have sought to strengthen people so that they will not just be isolated people in society, but that they'll be social and spiritual people. And to us, this is something that is highly important and which is fundamental, and that will allow our country to move forward so that they can have a full development. Thank you very much.
Good morning. I imagine to be here standing in front of all of you making a joke like the politicians or the scholars that have presented it before me yesterday and today. I don't come up with any ideas, and I'm standing in front of you today. In any way, I want to thank again BYU. Did I say it right? I want to thank them for their hospitality. And I believe that all of us who are here agree that we couldn't have received or expected more kindness and gentleness from them. And I have greetings from the Human Rights Commission from Peru, and I have a presentation from Peru, from the Peruvian government. I also have that, and we are going to talk a little bit about the experience from the technical and all the operation system, and how we work with this with the religious entities. And can you help me out with the PowerPoint that maybe will help us a little bit? And these sessions will have been initiated with PowerPoint presentations or from the presenters, Mr. Evans, and on Sunday evening, and they have presented situations in which everybody is involved. I should say that from Sunday, I have felt very edified. I think that's a term that I can use, by the messages that we have received at the conference and each one of the presenters on Sunday. I believe that the main purpose of the religious entities is to present to people with a firm character, with convictions that can contribute to their societies. And as lawyers, I understand most of you, I should begin. I should begin with from the constitutional state of rights that recognizes and guarantees the fundamental rights of the people. And from this, it results important, especially in a state that tries to be denominated as like us. And that's the first. It means to. It tries to be identified as religious, and if, and they should respect their exercise, individual as collective exercise of faith. And the fundamental rights are the same for every person, and they are born from dignity, their dignity as human beings. Therefore, the state has the objective of the protection and to make sure that those things are respected. In Peru, they were a confessional state. And I wanted to summarize in just one point of view all the constitutions through which we have gone through in Peru. And it's one of the countries that has had the more reforms, constitutional reforms, and in a wave of rigid confessionalism and mitigated confessionalism from the Republican Constitution to the 1933 Constitution that has been very strict, respecting the feelings of most, of the majority, and they says that it respects the rights of the Catholic religion, not confessionalism. And the rest of religions enjoy of the freedom for the exercise of their respective cults. And in some way, the 33 Constitution, they introduced the term of freedom. And so it's more clear, the freedom of religion, every person has the freedom of conscience and religion. There is no persecution for ideas and beliefs, and the public exercise of all the confessions is free, as long as they don't offend the moral or the public order. And in the same, in the 1993 Constitution, it speaks about this, and there is it's funded on the secular, in the secular state, and it's recognized with the significance that they have that freedom and the right to freedom of religion, and their exercise in society is of great importance. And this order of ideas, the Peru has been constituted a secular state with the freedom of religion and the rights that derive from that, in which they recognize the religious right and they value that, not only the confessional subject, but it also comes from, you know, with the Mexican, Colombian friends. And maybe my English is very difficult, so I rather speak in Spanish. And the interest that we have is the collaboration with the religious entities, our communities, our societies. What they need is to share that space in which both can meet, and that's the social environment. And the state acknowledges the religious right, not only the subjective or the religious, but also the social consequences that the religious practices generate from for the benefit of the society, of the community. And it's the link that meets or joins that unity of social and religious without giving to Caesar what is from Caesar and to God what is from God. And in this frame described in the Human Rights Commission, with the that has as one of the main functions the relationship between the state with the different religious entities, in which they are developed in two areas, as the direction of interconfessional affairs in the Catholic Church affairs. And it's already described by the historic character of this state, and nobody can deny this historic relationship of the state with the Catholic Church. What they don't And that one of the things that we have in the justice department is that is the freedom of religion. And in 1910, we have seen the constitutional mandate, but it hasn't been developed. It hadn't been developed. In 2010, they issued the law 29635, and it was issued by many religious entities, but it has been criticized a lot. But many points that they have, that we ourselves have had, and we have had the opportunity to observe in any case, and we have done the reports, and they have established topics that have been established in other countries as the recognition of the religious entities and the individual exercise of freedom of religion and the collective exercise of faith, and established from this law the exoneration of the religion classes and the state guarantee people for them to develop their religious beliefs in public or in private. And we are getting sound from another room. Okay. And so the religious entities register, and I have a copy from the law for if some of you want to share and know a little bit more about the normative frame of in Peru. But we consider that because of the strengthening of the freedom of religion implies the existence of a mutual respect of autonomy in each part, a situation that coincides with the freedom of religion or from the religious people, and the secular character of the state doesn't mean indifference or hostility to every other religions, but it values the different religious interests and is compatible with the commitment that the state assumes with all the religious entities according to the freedom principles of freedom that are in that collaboration. In this sense, Peru gives the collaboration to the religious entities, considering that the exercise of religion is a constitutional right, which is highly beneficial for society, and the religious practice is a great benefit for the national community, from all the community. Beyond the differences of faith that exist, there is a common objective, which is to work for the well-being welfare of everybody, and there is more strength that what the religious conviction gives, that is the and the altruism and benefit of the society in general. In this frame, the sector of the state that represents their commitments with the religious faiths and having their own nature coincide in one finality, as it is the service to the human community and to the nation, and it is necessary, therefore, to combine the ideas but not to go against, to serve the community. We run out of time, but I just wanted to show you some images, brief images. We visit different religious entities. We coordinate with them some activities that are they do in favor of the society. And we get together in the for the common interest and respect of the different entities. And as I said a little bit ago, they don't ignore or are indifferent or being hostile to their religious beliefs. But also we, instead of that, we value their religious beliefs, and that's why we keep working in this space.
Hola, buenos días. En primer lugar, agradecer a la gente de BYU la atención.
I wanted to thank BYU, and I'm very happy for the invitation, and I'm having a great time. The students are amazing, and so I'm going to talk about freedom of religion in the Republic of Argentina. Do you want to do it? Or we can switch. I'm going to do a little bit of in regard to the freedom of cult in Argentina, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the national constitution of Argentina. I'm going to start explaining a little bit about why the Republic of Argentina has their religious plurality. We are a country formed by immigrants, and they have come to Argentina with their culture, their beliefs, their religion. And so from the origin of Argentina has that religious plurality. And just like the Latin American countries, we are in the same conditions. In Argentina, the freedom of cult is in the national constitution. It was sanctioned in 1853, and it had reforms in 1860, 66, 98, 1949, 1972, and 1994. All the reforms respected the freedom of cult. And this, that was in the Article 14th, which is mentioned in the legal text. And because of the federal character of the state of Argentina, every province has their own articles and their own. And in general, each one of the constitutions has the possibility to define, but certainly all keep going with the same terms as the national constitution. In 1994 reform, we had a very important article, which is the inclusion of the international covenants with in 75 and in size 22. And what we do is to give them a constitutional hierarchy. And to give them in all these articles the norms and in the treaties for us have the same hierarchy that the national constitution mentions. Within some of the international treaties that we have included, the more is the Universal Declaration of the Human Rights Convention for Help for the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, International Convention of the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, International Pact on Civil and Political Rights, International Covenant of Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, and the Convention of the Children's Rights. And this reform have something very important which had to do with the Catholic faith from the president of the nation and established in Article 93, which they had to have some respect for other religious beliefs from the Constitution in 1853. Another thing that is important to mention is the principle of equality, which is in declared in the National Constitution. And this principle establishes that all people are equal in the law. And in religious affairs, they have the same freedom, and because of that, we shouldn't be discriminating because of their religious beliefs. And the discrimination because of the religious beliefs has been ruled in different. I'm not going to specify the numbers of laws, but because I'm going to make it easy with all the numbers, but I'm going to mention about the things that they have. And in the same discrimination, and they established the discrimination of the social rights constitutionalist.
The law of nationality prevents discriminating on basis of religious, and that and some the labor law prohibits discrimination on basis of religion. And the law of unions prohibits discrimination based on belief, and the public employment law prohibits that federal administration employees do anything to discriminate based on religion. And in the prison system, religious discrimination is also prohibited. And with regard to the immigration law, and this is my topic, so I'll talk more about that, but basically, the immigration law sets forth, and that it is an essential and inalienable right. And so all people And basically, with regard to the immigration law, all acts and omissions based on ethnic, religion, nationality, ideology, political opinion, sex, gender, financial and physical characteristics, any discrimination based on such things are considered illegal. And this is based on the national constitution and international treaties and laws. And Article 14 sets forth that in all jurisdictions, whether within the province, nationally, or at the municipal level, they favor initiatives that foster integration of foreigners in their local community. And as far as people living abroad, and this criteria applies to both Catholics and to other people, like when Juan Martin talked about the differences between the Catholic Church and the other churches that are not Catholic. And indeed, our Constitution has a secular sense, but we are moving toward resolving these types of differences. And in fact, the Immigration Act is one of the signs of this. And so we have made a reform in this area. And so all those who are ministers and up, so this is a, yes, an area that we have made considerable progress in. I'm going to continue a little bit on the immigration issue, and then we'll go directly toward the end because I think we're running out of time. And so Article 23 of the Immigration Act sets forth that, and which is, it talks about temporary residents, all those aliens who under the conditions set forth herein enter the country under the category of, for example, religious people, religious entities issued by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and who enter the country to carry out the activities, particular activities of their religion. And in Argentina, well, those who are supported by this law also includes entities or organizations that are of a religious nature. I'm going to render a brief explanation of how entities are established in Argentina. This is something that's important because it does cause some level of conflict. The Catholic Church has its own legal entity. It's recognized in the civil code. And so they don't need to register. They're tax exempt, etc. The other churches need to be registered twice. They need to have its own bylaws like a company would. They have to register with the Ministry of Justice and also with the Secretary of Worship so that they can become an officially recognized religion. And this causes some problems among most of the non-Catholic churches because they have to pay taxes, and if they don't pay taxes, then they have to pay file extensions individually. And what we are seeking and what most of the entities are seeking is to establish a law that will make that will level the playing field, so to speak, both for the Catholic Church and those who are not Catholic. And so this law does not exist in Argentina yet. There are several legal bills in Congress, and we are hoping that at some point those bills will be passed so that there will be full freedom of religion. Thank you.
Buenos días. Agradezco a
Thank Patrick, who's given me the last half hour of this discussion, and also my colleagues. What is left of the presentation is what I'm going to try to tell you about. And so I am really someone who I'm really a replacement, because the person who should have been here is the person who's head of the from the State Department. But I am here to talk not in the name of the Mexican government, but I work in human rights, and during the previous presidency, I was human rights director under the federal government, so I have some knowledge of this subject. So we're going to do the presentation, if I can get some help here, in four parts, and we're going to be concise and brief. So one of the basic definitions, and this is where I want to begin to say that human rights are these concepts that we all talk about, but which are very intangible. Human rights are moral rights, moral values. That's not something that I'm saying. That's in the treaties. That's what the courts say. That's what the legal experts say. Others have different views, and those are, but they're moral values, values that have been established in law and are only violated by the authorities, and they foster human dignity. And that's what human rights are. And so they are universal, interdependent, unalienable, and they are indivisible, because you cannot divide a right. Either I give you a right to food or I don't. I can't give you half a right to food. And they're interdependent because we cannot violate one right to give grant another right. So we cannot choose between ideological freedom and religious freedom. We have to grant all of those rights, because there's an accumulation of elements that make up human dignity. And human dignity is the human quality that brings out the best in us. And that's what human dignity is, to give others the best of ourselves. And this also has to do with equality, because equality is to treat others like we treat ourselves. If I treat myself poorly, then so if I don't treat myself poorly, then I can't treat my colleague poorly. I give the best of myself. And these are the qualities of human dignity. And this brings us to our first reflection, which is that human rights are not absolute. They have limits. Human rights is a conglomerate of freedoms that are always in conflict with people and with people in social groups. The laws and treaties also tell us that these limits are set forth in law, but they're not discretional. And they're not at the discretion of legislators, and they have to do with these limits that seek to bring out the common good. For instance, when there's a security crisis, then we are limited in our ability to transport ourselves. And this is where human rights kind of have a confrontation. So there's also a principle that everything has to be in the law. Everything has to be set forth by law. There's nothing outside the law. And I'm referring to the law with all of its legal sources, the international sources, and also the Constitution. And this invariably leads us to the violation of human rights, and that's why there are protective mechanisms, protective measures. And these violations are not something that is premeditated. They're simply new social needs, new challenges, failures in human coexistence. And this also means that we need rules, like as far as what right needs to prevail when there's a conflict of rights. And I'm referring to human rights. And so here we have the legal framework for religious freedom. And here I would like to stay with the characteristics of religious freedom. It is a first-generation human right. The first declarations included it, but paradoxically, there is no international specific international instrument specifically for this right. There are different international instruments. And there are two conditions for religious freedom. I'm not an expert in religion, but I have studied human rights somewhat. And what are these two conditions? A secular state and instrumental democracy. The Attorney General may have another opinion of secular states, like he explained to us yesterday. And that's what Lipset says and Robert Dahl. And what's the other one? The religious freedom is related to ideological freedom. Very good. The God that's represented by Patrick here, he's very insistent. And so how do we view religious freedom? This is the world of human rights and religious freedom. We have human rights violations committed by the authorities, but we also have, and just to not call them violations, we have limitations to human rights committed by the religious entities and churches themselves. And that's one type of conflict. And then there are also the inter-religious conflicts. And all these constitute violations of human or individual dignity. But human rights violations, the ones that are committed by an authority, can be considered human rights. You might say, well, my religious freedom was violated. I don't care who did it. And you're right. We're just talking from a theoretical viewpoint. Now, how is the tendency of human rights? What I was saying is this is a personal point of view. The human rights category in public space is very prevalent. Sometimes we feel invaded by the decision of a court or by an human rights organization. We feel invaded and violated in our interests because there is the lack of compatibility with our way of thinking, including those who make the recommendation. They may say, well, I'm a very prestigious physician and a lawyer is imposing a restriction on me. How can an attorney impose a malpractice sanction on a great physician? These things happen, or on a pilot, or somebody with a very, very highly specialized person. And this also gives empowerment to some minority groups that are. We've seen some examples of that in the development of, or during these sessions. And this also causes lack of trust. In Mexico, it's very common to say that human rights exist to protect criminals. Right? In other countries, too, I know, but I wanted to be respectful. The issue of religious freedom involves a conflict that I see from an organizational standpoint. They have been structured for a very long time, and what the theory does not say is that we need to be pluralists and horizontal. They need to resolve this problem. I'm just going to note it, but in the last part of my talk here, we can. And then also, what we have been facing. The values and dogmas are inalienable, and there's this in society's dynamic, and all of a sudden there's a new concept of the family. Now, I don't know if there can be a new concept of the family, but socially this is something that is happening. We may or may not be may or may not agree. Personally, I don't agree, but there are some groups that believe that this concept of the family can be expanded. So that's something we need to look at. In Mexico, I just wanted to mention that how this is, comes about. Mexico, by definition, is a secular state. We have two armed conflicts in the 1800s and in the 1800 and the 1900, where there was a where there's a movement toward a secular state. We have a law which is, and we have limited the political rights of religious ministers. We have limited their property rights. We have limited, well, conscientious objector does not exist in Mexico. From our viewpoint, conscientious objector is a balance point between the individual and the common good. In other words, what do I need to do when there's a rule that imposes duty on me that I don't agree with? And so my autonomy, it's my autonomy against the common good. And which should prevail, my decision or the common good? Objectors can, the conscious objector standpoint says that it is my individual standpoint, but this does not exist in Mexico. And in Mexico, in terms of religious freedom, it is not a problem. Human rights organizations, now I've been told that I'm out of time, but I hope you'll give me... But there have only been four recommendations in the last 10 years, the general recommendation, and that had to do with Jehovah's Witnesses and honoring the flag, something that also caused court cases in the United States. This has also happened in Oaxaca, New Jerusalem, and Chenalco. And these are also agrarian conflicts that mix with religious freedom. So we, when we have this melting pot of issues, then they become very difficult to resolve. And to close, in Mexico, the issues that we have pending are the fact that the notion of conscientious objector is not included in the law. There is an article that specifically says that conscientious objector is not exempt from law, and so it seems as though it goes against the principle of conscientious objector. And also with regard to our legislators, they're not exactly the greatest specialists in this area, and but we have to remember that there's the principle that ignorance of law does not cause exemption from the law. And but this is something that is limiting the concept of conscientious objector. And then as far as human rights are concerned, the only thing I wanted to tell you as far as where human rights are is that I am convinced that they work and they are the main capital that societies have in the present day. And I believe that carrying out human rights make us more worthy and better on an everyday basis. Thank you very much.
Thank you to our presenters for their presentations. Very interesting and a lot of information. They have shortened their a little bit their presentation so that we can have some time for questions. Very brief questions, I should say. So we have like 6-7 minutes for questions. Good afternoon. Good morning. Dr. Eliseo, is not exactly a question, but you constructed something that is very interesting. I would like you to go back to that. And you said that the values that are served to human rights are served to activate the human rights or the human dignity. Can you develop a little bit more on that? The brief questions, brief answers. Yes, there is a theory in the justice that indicates that the laws in itself are values. Human rights, from my point of view, but in the way in which I have developed the research, I understand that they are values, but that these values have a minimal ethic, and today I feel a little bit more comfortable if I stand up. Is that okay? No, be brief. Nobody can say today that is not a value, the life is not a value, or physical integrity, or sexual freedom. Those are values that are kept in within the human rights, and these are to live in with dignity. What is dignity? Is the best conditions of life of a person. There are other principles that will tell us the principle of progressivity, of progress, and that because of that, they have the right to health in a constitution, knowing that they are not going to be given health to everybody. But the principle of human right is that we should use all the resources to fulfill that right, not that we have to give that right to everybody. And finally, why do I believe in the values of human rights? Because in some way, in some measure, their realization is the ideal type, is an aspirational desire. When we have human rights, we want to, when we reach one human right, then we will want a higher level. And dignity also goes through the best condition, material conditions, not only the spiritual aspirations. And I don't know if that answers. Yesterday, someone called, told me something about kind of like saying something to the foreigners, but I'm going to say something to my countrymen. In this, Dr. Eliseo, you presented something, and others, you kind of like skipped them. But I got to see something where it said moral. What does this mean, this PowerPoint that I saw, a moral duality?
Like I said, in the Mexican state, Mexico is a secular state, but in terms of how the law is applied, there is a double standard because churches were denied registering as legal entities. But in Mexico, religious teaching has to be secular, and there were universities that had chapels. And so that was a blatant violation of the law. And so there is this understanding in the lay state or in the secular state in terms of not intervening within the other's areas. And why do I say it's a double standard? Because the religious organizations seem to pretend that they were complying with the law, and this was not actually happening.
Thank you for your intervention. Personally, I like that a lot. And I wanted to know your opinion, your criteria on this, with what happens a lot in our countries, especially in the case of Venezuela, where the human rights from the citizen's point of view and the concept as lawyers we know and we admire, but from the citizen's point of view has been debilitated a lot. And why? Because of two reasons, at least in Venezuela. One, because it has been politicized, the human right. And when I'm in the position, I'm the greatest defender of human rights. But when I go to the government, I am the greatest transgressor of human rights. That's bad. It doesn't exist. And when we had opposition, it was my banner. And then now I am breaking that, those human rights in every moment. And second, what you mentioned is it also happens in Venezuela, and my Peruvian friend said that the citizen says that human rights are for criminals because the common citizen feels unprotected, feels that the state is not protecting him. In the meantime, they treat criminals with soft hand. They are all these things fall on deaf ears. And even he is my friend or my accomplice. And so all of these reflections of valorization and how citizens confront this concept of human rights. The time is over, and so if you have any comment. So thank you so much again to our presenters, and we are going to end. Thank you very much.